In NPR's business report, Cuba has signed contracts to buy more than $10 million worth of U.S. food products. The round of new food deals could total more than 10 times that amount. Ed Thompson reports.
The head of the government-controlled food import company says whoever wins the U.S. presidential election, Cuba is in favor of working with American farmers. He was speaking at a trade fair in Havana, where Cuba signed contracts for $300,000 worth of dairy cattle and $10 million in wheat, chicken, and pork from producers in Florida and Georgia. Contracts could reach $150 million during the week of negotiating with U.S. agribusinesses. Over the past 3 years, since restrictions were eased to permit food sales to Cuba on a cash-only basis, the communist-run island has contracted to buy more than $900 million in American farm goods. Havana will closely watch the presidential election. While both President Bush and Senator Kerry support the trade embargo against Cuba, Kerry has said he wants a full review of Washington's policy toward Havana. For NPR News, I'm Ed Thompson.
Japanese share prices closed higher today. Optimism over earnings lifted banks. A drop in oil prices below $50 a barrel also helped. The Nikkei average rose by 1.43% to close at 10,887. The broader topics index was up by 1.33% to finish at 1,094. Both indices hit their highest closing level since October 19th. Shares had fallen in the previous two sessions, partly because of uncertainty ahead of today's U.S. presidential election. Investors bought back recent losers, such as brokers, steel, and shipping firms, but car makers were weak. Some analysts are concerned that about a possible change in U.S. trade policy in favor of U.S. manufacturers after the presidential election, or a change in U.S. currency policy that might weaken the dollar versus the yen. The Argentine government has added interest payments worth $475 million in new bonds in a bid to encourage creditors to accept restructuring of its $100 billion debt. The new offer was criticized by investors, but the markets responded positively. Clinton Porteous reports.
Argentine authorities are still trying to strike a deal over the biggest government debt default in history. In the latest proposal, there are extra interest payments worth almost $500 million. The plan was released in Buenos Aires and later submitted to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Under the plan, creditors will get back about 25 cents in every dollar through three types of new bonds. Most of the major investor groups rejected the deal, saying it wasn't enough. Two other offers from the Argentine government were also rejected last year. But the Argentine stock market rose on the latest announcement, and the value of key defaulted bonds also increased. The offer is open to investors from November 29. For NPR News, I'm Clinton Porteous.
The Washington Post is reporting today that the world's largest internet service provider, America Online, is preparing to cut its workforce by more than 700 employees early next month. The newspaper says the move is being made to cut costs. I'm Carl Castle, NPR News, in Washington.
It's 9.5 minutes past 10 o'clock Central Time, and in Champaign-Urbana right now, we have a temperature of 50 degrees at Willard Airport. On the Friends Plaza, it's 49. Still some rain and drizzle to our south and east around Paris and eastward, but we'll have mostly dry weather the rest of today, maybe a few patches of drizzle. It'll be breezy and cool, high 52, north winds 12 to 24 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, low near 40. Tomorrow, cloudy with showers returning during the afternoon, the high 53. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. In Ohio, the political parties will be able to challenge voters at the polls today. A federal appeals court ruling last night sided with the Ohio Republican Party, which is challenging the registrations of certain voters. Democrats have said that Republicans are targeting minority voters who were more likely to vote Democratic. Janet Babin of member station WCPN in Cleveland has been following the story, and we've reached her about 100 feet from a polling site just outside the city. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what will this court ruling mean for people at the polls in Ohio today?
Well, it means that voters could be challenged at the polls as to whether they are legally registered to vote. A challenger can question a voter's citizenship, age, or residency. Now, that would happen indirectly. The challenger would ask one of the election workers to ask a judge to present ID or additional information. And the Cleveland Area Elections Board here has issued a directive early this morning trying to get the word out, telling people, recommending voters to bring ID with them to the polls so that they are prepared if they are challenged.
Explain for us what's behind this fight over challenging voters exactly.
Well, there were two cases brought, one by Marion and Donald Spencer of the Cincinnati area, and they're civil rights activists. And another came from the Democratic Party in a county here near Akron, Ohio. And basically, what the suit said is that these challengers are unconstitutional and could be discriminatory, especially against minority voters. There are literally thousands of challengers, though. There are Republican challengers and Democratic challengers. But the cases, the lower courts found that these challengers would likely be could be found to be unconstitutional, and that they could be discriminatory. In one of the rulings from Judge Susan DeLott, she stated that, you know, this challenger system could have lines out the door of people waiting to vote, that it could disrupt the voting system.
So that was in favor in that case earlier this week of the Democrats. This new ruling from a higher court, a federal appeals court, is in favor of the Republicans. What will this latest decision, or rather, will it be appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and can it make a difference today?
Well, it already has been appealed to, Justice John Paul Stevens refused a request to throw out the Sixth Circuit ruling. In his opinion, he wrote that it wouldn't be prudent at this time, so close to the election, to do this. And he said that while the allegations of abuse are serious, he wrote, it's impossible to determine the ultimate validity of the claims of the plaintiffs. That this could be unconstitutional, or that the challenger process could be discriminatory.
Well, given all of this, of course, Ohio is a very important swing state. What kind of difference could this make?
Well, I mean, that's yet to be seen. I mean, we've heard reports already this morning that one poll location didn't let a challenger in because they thought that they hadn't heard of the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling. So I think that there might be confusion at the polls, but local elections boards are obviously doing everything they can to get word out to their workers what the proper format is for these challengers to follow. And also before, earlier this weekend, many elections boards held training sessions telling these challengers exactly what they can and cannot do. For example, they can't disrupt the voting process. They can't directly even speak to a voter. So they really have to have a hands-off approach to challenging voters. And this law has been on Ohio's books for some time, but it's just never been used to this capacity, obviously because of the tight nature of this race.
Right.
Both parties doing as much as they can.
Janet Babin, thanks very much. Standing outside a polling site outside Cleveland from member station WCPN.
This year's expected high voter turnout will include many people who cast absentee ballots from overseas. American soldiers are voting from Iraq and Afghanistan. And so, after much effort, is Andrew Finkel. He's an American journalist living in Istanbul. He's on the phone now from London. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
So you've been eligible to vote for many years and have not.
Yes, I'm embarrassed to admit that I first could have voted in 1972 when McGovern was fighting Nixon. But it wasn't really until this election that I felt inspired and determined to vote.
And how hard was it?
Well, it certainly was a little bit complicated. I mean, I'm grateful for the Internet. I'm grateful for the intervention of people in the American consulate. But it was quite a complicated saga. I mean, first you had to register in the place of last residence in the United States. You have to remember what your address was. You have to go to the consulate to get your application notarized, or perhaps you don't. You have to find out whether you do. Then you have to send it away. You have to wait. And then you wait, and then you wait, and then perhaps you get your ballot. And if you don't get your ballot, there's an emergency procedure for sending a federal ballot. It's not as straightforward as it might be.
When you finally got the ballot in front of you and had your choices to make, was it worth it?
Well, it was worth it. And indeed, I confess that I managed to get two ballots. I hope there are no Republican lawyers listening, but I actually voted twice, although I'm led to believe that one ballot cancels out the other, so I didn't actually break any laws. But yes.
Hold on. How did you end up with two different ballots?
Well, because my absentee ballot didn't arrive when it should have arrived, you can apply for what's called a federal ballot, which allows you to write in the name of the federal candidates, the president and the congressman. Then, of course, you know, a week later, after it should have, the real ballot arrived, and which allows you to vote for things like, you know, the dog catcher and the regent of your local community college. But if you fill that in, apparently, it cancels out the federal ballot.
Now, I imagine you're in touch with other American expatriates in Istanbul.
I am indeed, and in other countries. And I think we've all decided that this is the year we've had to vote. I mean, one person I know who didn't actually get her ballot in time is actually flying off to Ann Arbor to vote. Another person is voting for the first time in a long time. I actually met someone the other day in London whose wife is American, and the last time she voted was for Johnson against Goldwater, and she's so inspired that she's voting again for the second time 40 years later.
Andrew Finkel is an American journalist living in Istanbul. He first told his story on the pages of the Washington Post. Thanks very much.
My pleasure.
American soldiers overseas have won extra time to vote in a critical state. Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell says the troops overseas can have an extra 8 days to get in their absentee ballots. There was a delay in sending the ballots because of a dispute over whether Ralph Nader should appear.
We spoke to some voters here in the U.S. who, as late as yesterday, were waiting to see if they could vote absentee.
My name is Dominic Nolasco. I'm 20 years old. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I had went to rockthevote.com to register, and nothing really happened. So I called them up, gave them a ring, and said, you know, I haven't seen my absentee ballot yet. And she said, well, the only really chance you have of voting is if you print out an application and fax it to us. So this is probably 10 o'clock at night. I, you know, had to go to the Kinko's and faxed it. So I've yet to see my absentee ballot. So hopefully it's in my mailbox. I'm probably going to have to FedEx it, which is going to cost me a bit of money.
My name is Sarah Giles from Reading, Pennsylvania. This is my first time voting. So I wasn't exactly sure how to go about getting my absentee ballot. But once I sent for one, that was about maybe 3 weeks ago, and I've been still waiting for it. And I'm just kind of panicking, thinking, am I going to not be able to vote?
Some other voters have gone to some lengths to be sure their voices are heard.
My name is Heather Hunsaker. My family's from Washington, and I was living in Utah. But I decided to register to vote in Washington, where my vote would count. And I've flown to Seattle so that I can vote in Snoqualmie Valley.
My name is Donna Lewis, and I'm from Lawrenceville, Georgia. And last week, Monday, I went to do early voting. The wait was 2 hours and 45 minutes, but they made it as pleasant as possible. They would call 10 numbers at a time, and then you would go upstairs and vote rather than having to wait in line the whole 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Similar wait times slowed down early voters from Florida to California. The time is 19 minutes past the hour.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from JBJ Gifts, Home Decor and Collectibles, 723 South Neal, 2 blocks south of Green Street in Champaign. JBJ's offers Christmas decorations including Christmas ornaments, angels, Santas, snowmen and nativities, gifts, collectibles, and home decor items. More information is available online at jbjgifts.com. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway piano showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos.
You're listening to Morning Edition on AM 580 WILL Urbana. Good morning. My name is David Inge. We've had a little change in our schedule this morning so that we can bring you at about 10:30 live coverage of the announcement by the University of Illinois of the selection of a new president. And in fact, the Associated Press is reporting this morning that the new president will be B. Joseph White. A senior U of I official who spoke on the condition of anonymity said the appointment would be formalized by a vote of the trustees on November 11th. He is 56 years old. He's a business professor and former interim president at the University of Michigan, and he will be the University of Illinois' 16th president. And again, we expect to have live coverage of this announcement for you from Chicago at 10:30. And as it is the first Tuesday of the month, we also need to do this. This is a test of the emergency alert system.
Message was instituted by the Illinois Emergency Management Agency. This station is participating in a required monthly test of the Illinois Emergency Alert System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
Networks completely botched the job of calling the election in 2000, repeatedly miscalling the state of Florida. NPR's Luke Burbank reports on what the networks are doing this year in an effort to get it right.
Remember this.
For those of you who went to bed or started going off to brush your teeth and come back and say, hello, what's this, Dan Rather? Well, I got to tell you folks, A, I don't know. B, I don't know anybody who does know.
The TV networks certainly do. 4 years ago, they projected Florida had gone to Al Gore, then changed their mind and said George W. Bush had won it. Then they had to concede that they didn't really know. Kathleen Frankovic directs surveys for CBS. She was in the control room that night.
It's pretty awful. I mean, I have to review my entire life to see if it was my darkest day ever, but it was definitely a bad day.
Much of the blame fell on the people who conducted the exit polls. Here's how the system works. At select polling locations, polling teams hand out questionnaires to people who have just voted. If you're picked and you have a sense of civic duty or a lot of extra time on your hands, you fill it out. Information about you and your vote then goes anonymously to a group of statisticians who analyze it and send it on to the networks. Warren Matofsky pioneered the use of exit polls back in 1967. He says the faulty call in 2000 was only the second time in his life he's seen such a thing.
There were a series of very minor things, all of which leaned in the Gore direction, and we ended up with Gore.
After the problems in Florida, the group in charge of exit polling, Voter News Service, underwent a $15 million overhaul. Then came Election Day 2002. Amazingly, the entire VNS system collapsed. This year, Matofsky and Joe Lenski of Edison Research have been tapped to run the exit polls for the networks. Lenski says one big change will be a more sophisticated system for gauging absentee votes.
A lot of assumptions have been made over the years because it had worked that way, that absentee voting was fairly similar to election day voting, and in some states that's not the case. So what we have is specifically state-by-state estimates based on past absentee vote history of how the absentee voters differ from the election day voters.
The new group handling the exit polls, called National Election Pool, has spent the last week calling a sample of absentee voters in key states to make sure their votes are being properly accounted for. Today, NEP staffers will conduct more than 100,000 surveys in the field. Kathleen Frankovic says collecting that data is one thing. Figuring out what it means is another.
It's science, but it has to be science infused by an awful lot of understanding and knowledge about the problems that can occur when you go from some pure statistical model to the actual application of it to a real-world situation.
The networks say they're instituting changes as well to guarantee the accuracy of their results. For instance, ABC says it won't call any race that's within one percentage point, even if all the precincts are reporting. Doug Merkel directs the network's decision desk.
If we get down to it early in the morning or, you know, late that night, and we just can't project some races because they're too close, that'll be fine. People, I think, will be prepared for that.
NBC is taking it a step further by not telling its stat crunchers what the other networks are saying or when they're saying it. And CNN will gather independent vote returns in key precincts just in case exit polls are wrong. And all the networks promise this year they're more interested in getting it right than getting it first. ABC's Merkel says it was different in 2000.
At times there was some pressure put on the decision desk when other networks had projected something, and we will not be getting that kind of pressure this time.
Kathleen Frankovic says this year, CBS will be reminding its viewers that the information on that big screen behind Dan Rather is only a projection.
We have made it much clearer in our reporting, in our graphics, in our displays, that we are not declaring a winner, that what we are doing is projecting an outcome. We had sort of assumed a mantle of infallibility, and we never let the viewer in on what was behind the curtain and what went into it.
It's safe to say the networks are just hoping this year's election coverage doesn't end up looking like a rerun. Luke Burbank, NPR News, Washington.
Most polls are open at this hour across the country. That means thousands and thousands of volunteers are up early, working hard to help make today's voting successful. Morning Edition has caught up with several of these volunteers throughout the morning.
Hey, this is Shelley Frazier-Mickle, and I'm in Gainesville, Florida, in North Florida, and I am here to help open up a precinct as a poll worker. I think the most impressive thing that we do as poll workers is that the clerk of our precinct will give us an oath, and we raise our hand and say that we promise to prevent voter fraud and to uphold the Constitution for every voter's right to be served. And most of us take this oath as seriously as, if not more seriously, than our wedding vows.
This is Janet Jay. I'm in Ward 3, District 3, Mount Lebanon, Pennsylvania, which is a suburb of Pittsburgh. And we have a really remarkable turnout this morning. What the poll workers here tell me, some of whom have been here like 20 years, is they've never seen this many people at this hour of the morning. Our line here at this poll, there are generally about 25 people in the line. And what I understand from the other election judge that I talked to, he said usually they're like, say 10, 15 people in the line, and then it sort of drops off. It's not dropping off at all.
Hi, I'm Richard Jensen. We're in Iowa, and in Iowa City, Iowa, and the precinct is at Longfellow School, and I'm in the gymnasium here, and that's where we're set up, and there's quite a few little young folks here about hip high.
Hi, this is Susan Inman. I am Director of Elections for the Pulaski County Election Commission in Little Rock, Arkansas. We are seeing a busy day. We have seen voters lined up at polling stations 45 minutes before they open. Our poll workers don't get breaks. They're working nonstop throughout the day. They will obviously have to take moments when they must have certain breaks, but for the most part, they'll be on go. That includes me, too. I'll be here till it's all over with.
My name is Bob Tiedemann. I'm a poll watcher for the 2nd Precinct, Park County in Colorado, in Alma, Colorado. Right now, we've got blue skies, cold temperatures. Temperature right now is 0 degrees. The road conditions are outstanding. The roads have all been cleaned up. We had some snow yesterday, but it's a beautiful day today. From what we've seen in the first hour and a half, we've got over 20% of the actual total precinct registry already through the polls. We have had more voters already turn out today than we had in the primary season. Some of the stuff that's going on with the provisional ballots, we've had several instances where we've had to use the provisional ballots, and it's worked out outstanding. So I think that's been a great process.
A handful of the thousands of volunteers at the polls today. Long lines at many polling places are expected to continue throughout the day and early evening in many states across the country.
Programming on AM 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Art Mart in the Lincoln Square Mall, Urbana. The Art Mart is pleased to support public radio in East Central Illinois.
This is AM 580 WILL Urbana, public radio from the campus of the University of Illinois. Now we're going to go to Chicago. Momentarily, we're expecting that we'll have some live coverage of an announcement today of a new president for the University of Illinois. The Associated Press is reporting that the new president will be B. Joseph White. He is a former business professor, former interim president of the University of Michigan, and he will be, if approved by the University of Illinois Board of Trustees, the university 16th president. There will be an official announcement of this coming up in just a moment, and we'll have coverage for you live from Chicago. Coming up a little bit later, as we get back to our regular schedule, we expect in hour two, what would be the second hour of Focus 580, to be talking about Pakistan. So we hope you'll stay tuned for that. Now we'll be going to Chicago for that live coverage of the announcement of the new president. We're a little...
We're just a bit uncertain here about making our connection. I'm sure that we'll get to it, and it'll start in just a moment. One other thing I do want to mention here, because we have had some questions this morning. People are expecting our usual first hour or the first hour of Focus that we had scheduled and that we had promoted. You might have been expecting the opportunity to talk with Ray Karch, auto mechanic. We have him periodically on the program to answer questions about car care. And when we got word that we'd be able to broadcast the announcement of the U of I president, we decided we'd like to do that. So we have rescheduled Rick's appearance, and he will be on this program 1 week from tomorrow, next Wednesday. That's the 10th, 10 o'clock in the morning. So that will be our usual opportunity that we try to offer you at least once every season, four times a year, to call in and ask questions about your car. So that'll be next week. And again, I do want to mention, I think I didn't actually get a chance to mention the guest for hour number two, our regular 11 o'clock hour. We'll talk with Stephen Cohen. He's a senior fellow in foreign policy studies at the Brookings Institution, has been following the politics and the history of both Pakistan and India for a long time, and of course has been a guest on this program before. He was for a number of years on the faculty here at the University of Illinois, and was one of the founders, former director of the program in arms control, disarmament, and international security. And he is now at the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., has been there since 1998, continuing the kind of research and writing that he'd been doing for a long time about India and Pakistan. And he has a new book out, which is titled The Idea of Pakistan. And we'll be talking about that, a little bit about its history, but also trying to catch up on what has been going on recently in that country. It's one of those places in the world that attracts people's attention because of the potential for conflict, between Pakistan and India, which has happened before. We also worry because of the fact that both of those countries have demonstrated the capability to build nuclear weapons. So we'll be talking with Stephen Cohen from the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., in the 11 o'clock hour of Focus 580. And again, we expect here momentarily to be bringing you live coverage of that announcement from Chicago, an announcement of selection of a new president for the University of Illinois.
Thank you.
We're going down to Chicago for that announcement on the selection of the new president for the University of Illinois.
Centers and laboratories keep Illinois competitive in everything from education and agriculture to advanced electronics, computer science, and engineering and molecular biology. Many of the university's undergraduate and graduate programs are recognized as among the best in the world. Over the years, the U of I has educated hundreds of thousands of sons and daughters of Illinois, the nation, and the world. And in the process, it has created an alumni body that is one of the largest, over 500,000 living alumni. But enough about us. Today is Election Day, the day the nation will select its president for the next 4 years. Today, we at the university are honored to introduce to you our newest president, the 16th in the university's 137-year history, Dr. B. Joseph White. Before I formally introduce Dr. White, I want to take a few minutes to remark on the thoughtful, collaborative process over the past 9 months that brought us to this day. Our efforts began last January when President Jim Stuckel announced his retirement, effective this coming February. President Stuckel's commitment to the U of I extends for over 40 years. He's been a student, a faculty member, an administrator, a chancellor, and for the last 10 years, president of the university. Jim, on behalf of a grateful university, I'd like to thank you and Joan for an outstanding record of service and accomplishment to your alma mater. Thank you very much. Our board knew what Jim's announcement meant to us, a challenge and opportunity of great importance. After first outlining the process and establishing expectations, we assembled a search committee comprising 19 dedicated women and men, 8 faculty members from our 3 campuses, 3 students, one from each campus, a representative from academic professionals, one from civil service, 3 members from our alumni and foundation, 1 alumnus at large, the committee chair, and a committee chair selection. They represent a wide variety of university constituencies, but have one essential trait in common: their love of the University of Illinois, its best interest, and its continued high quality. I want to thank all of them for their dedication, and I'd now like to single out for congratulations the chair, Dean Avijit Ghosh, who's here, and the co-chairs, Elliot Kaufman and Kerry McMillan. Job well done. We're also fortunate to retain the services of a nationally renowned executive recruiting firm, Baker Parker of Atlanta, Georgia, and I extend my congratulations to Jerry Baker and Dan Parker for their fine work and professionalism. I'd also like to thank my colleagues on the board for their hard work and dedication. With us this morning is Trustee Devin Bruce, Trustee Francis Carroll, Trustee Natalie Garcia from the UIC campus, and Trustee Naranjan Shah. Finally, all of us on the board extend our deep appreciation to our board secretary, Michelle Thompson, who, as usual, worked tirelessly on our behalf. Thank you, Michelle. The first task in the board's charge to the search committee was to draft a white paper to guide us in the search and ensure the best possible candidates would be considered. To paraphrase from the white paper, the next president of the University of Illinois will have a profound impact on the future of the university as well as on the world of higher education. The new president must provide strategic and operational leadership to a university with increasingly diverse constituencies and complex issues to face. A university with a foundation of excellence and one that reaches every corner of the state and does so from a national platform with a global reach. A tall order indeed. The search committee received well over 120 nominations or expressions of interest. The candidate pool was diverse in background and experience, in gender and in ethnicity. After deliberative research, consultation, and culling, the committee ultimately interviewed 12 candidates, five of whom were forwarded to the Board of Trustees for consideration. The Board has spent the last several weeks reviewing and interviewing the five candidates. The quality of all was impressive, and all were exceptional. We thank each of them for their interest and time they spent participating in the process. But there was one clear choice, and he is with us today. Let me tell you a little bit about Joe White, and then we'll let him speak further about his background and his aspirations for the University of Illinois. Dr. White is a native Midwesterner. Born in Detroit, raised in Kalamazoo, Michigan, he received his bachelor's degree from the Georgetown University School of Foreign Service, his master's degree in business administration from Harvard, his doctorate in business administration at the University of Michigan. Joe has been affiliated with the University of Michigan for over three decades. He spent 10 years as the dean of the business school, which he built into one of the top-ranked business schools in the country, and grew its endowment by more than sevenfold. In 2002, Joe served as interim president of the University of Michigan, an opportunity for him to understand what it takes to run a major teaching and research institution in the Big Ten. Dr. White's breadth of experience includes work in the private sector. He's been a senior executive with a Fortune 100 manufacturing company and currently serves as a member or trustee on the boards of several companies. All in all, Joe White fits the criteria, qualifications, and expectations set out in the white paper. Or to say it another way, our white paper describes Joe White. We're excited to have Joe lead us into the future. And now if you'd please join me in giving a warm welcome to the 16th president of the University of Illinois, Dr. Joseph B. White.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Larry. Well, this is a very special moment. It's an election day I'll never forget. I did vote. I hope you did or will. Larry and the members of the Board of Trustees, I'm honored to accept your invitation to serve as the next president of the University of Illinois. 2 months ago, I knew that this university was an impressive institution. But since I became involved in the presidential search, I've learned week by week that it is much more than that. The University of Illinois is an historic, consequential, dynamic, overachieving institution. It is of enormously great importance to the state of Illinois, to the nation, and to the world. I'm thrilled to take on the challenge of leading the University of Illinois in the years ahead. For me, leadership is about service, and this is a university worth serving with all my heart and soul. Why? Because everything I've come to love about higher education, the University of Illinois does on a large scale and with excellence. We educate first-generation college students. We do Nobel Prize-winning science. We provide clinical medical care and graduate more MDs than any other university in the country. We lead in many fields, including agriculture, architecture, the arts and humanities, social work, and many, many more. We win Big Ten basketball championships, and we field many sports in which student athletes compete and play for sheer love of the game, both men and women. Perhaps most important, the prosperity and well-being of the citizens of the great state of Illinois are inextricably intertwined with the University of Illinois, and they have been for 136 years. I really think that the University of Illinois is the university of the future, and the reason is our richness and our reach. In Urbana, we have an extraordinary historic campus, engaged in top-notch, in-depth research and teaching in over 150 disciplines. In Chicago, we have a dynamic, growing university that is integral to the life of what, for me, since I grew up as a kid in Kalamazoo, has always been the world's greatest city. In Springfield, we have a fresh, innovative approach to education on a very human scale in the state capital. In addition, the University of Illinois educates thousands through high-quality online education and serves millions around the world with the nation's greatest university library. In other words, what I've found over the last 2 months is that this is truly a magnificent university. I want to thank the trustees and the chair of the board, Larry Epley, for entrusting me with the leadership and management of the University of Illinois in the years ahead. There could be no higher expression of trust, and I thank you for that. I thank Dean Ghosh and the consultative committee for managing an extraordinarily professional and high-class search process. I thank President Jim Stuckel and his wife Joan for your dedicated leadership and service to the university over the last decade. You've been wonderful stewards and builders, and your legacy is nothing less than a university poised for even greater achievement in the years ahead. I thank the chancellors, Sylvia Manning, Richard Herman, and Richard Reingeisen, and the executive officers, deans, faculty, and staff for your respective contributions to building such a great institution. Thank you. I want to also thank the students of the University of Illinois. Perhaps the thing I love most about university life is the students and their energy and vitality and their stage of life. And I thank the students, as well as the 550,000 alumni who have preceded you, for your achievements and for your love of our university. Finally, this is an occasion, a special occasion, for me to thank the leadership and the people of the state of Illinois for your foresight in providing the resources to build a great public university over the last 136 years. May your wisdom and generosity continue to prevail in the years ahead. My wife Mary and I look forward to making our home with pride in the historic President's House on the Urbana campus. We look forward to becoming members of the Urbana-Champaign communities. We also look forward to spending substantial time on our campuses in Chicago and in Springfield. We know our children and our adult children and our grandchildren look forward to visiting the President's House. Although my feet were planted firmly on the ground again this morning, I was reminded of how each person sees things through his and her lens. When I was talking to my son in the UK, and he reported that my four-year-old grandson Bernie's reaction to the news of the new job and the move was, "Oh no, will they still have the bunk beds?" The answer is, we will. You might wonder what my intentions are as the next president of the University of Illinois. I can state them very simply. First, I'll do everything required to continue to build the performance, the stature, the reputation, and the resources of the university. Second, I will ensure that the work of the university is hardwired to the needs of the people of Illinois, especially in education, economic development, and healthcare, vital matters that touch every citizen. Third, I will focus intensively on maintaining access to the university as a gateway of opportunity for tens of thousands of talented students, as well as strengthening the excellence of the university, which is the reason these students love to be members of our community. Finally, I will do my best to ensure that our campus communities are models of diverse people working together every day with mutual respect, with each person thriving in the process. I look forward to working with the trustees, Governor Blagojevich, Mayor Daley, and the leaders of the university, state, and campus communities to achieve great things in the years ahead. Thank you so much.
They've never let me speak at a podium unless I let Jim talk, so President Stuckel, please.
Aren't we lucky? Joe and Mary are going to be wonderful representatives of this university. I don't know Joe well, but when I heard him talk about what his vision was, it was absolutely the right thing in terms of what I know about the history of the University of Illinois. I'm just absolutely excited about the new leadership with Joe and Mary. And I know it's going to be a spectacular run. But as Joe and Mary will learn, the University of Illinois considers itself the university of all the people of Illinois. Our work reaches beyond the state's borders as well. We have a strong international perspective in both education and outreach. This dimension is a hallmark of the University of Illinois, as important to us as Extension, the Medical Center, and online learning. For 140 years, this university has led by 16 different presidents, and I'm just delighted about the newest president that's about to take the leadership role. Each, I believe, has advanced the university in ways important to the time and responsive to the needs of the people of Illinois and of the university's own goals and ambitions. Joan and I have absolutely been honored and humbled to be a part of this great university as the 15th president and spouse of this university. And today, I believe, this university has made a great leap forward in naming Dr. Joseph White and Mary as the president and spouse of a wonderful university. Many of you know that top-notch universities like the University of Illinois pick their leaders in an elaborate and sometimes viewed in a very arcane way. The only thing that's missing is kind of the wisp of white smoke out of the chimney at the end of the process. But to help find and attract the best new leader, we bring together good men and women who understand the values of the university, appreciate the past, and eagerly anticipate the years to come. And so I commend both the consultative committee for their long months and works and hours of work in finding Joe White, and also the Board of Trustees, who have made a wonderful choice, and I'm not surprised that either of them would do so. But I just want to thank you for the family that you've done this, and you made a wonderful choice. Ever mindful that the outcome trumps process every time, still it is vitally important to acknowledge a process that has integrity and is worthy of this great university. In both the means and the end, the search process just happily concluded, I think, as a model nationally. Well, as Joe said, the timing of today's announcement is a happy accident. The country doesn't know who their next president is going to be, but we sure know, and it's Joe White. Welcome to the family, Joe.
Next, Dr. Sylvia Manning, but if you'll give me a moment, I'll introduce some of the other guests present. From the Urbana campus, Richard Herman, Chancellor. From the Springfield campus, Rich Ringheisen, Chancellor. Tom Barrows, University Counsel. Tom Hardy, we don't know. Sid Misick, Director of the Foundation. Michelle Thompson, Board Secretary. Rick Schell, Director of Government Relations. And Lauren Taylor, from the Alumni Association. Oh, and Steve Rugg and Dave Sheekwin, a couple of vice presidents. Chet Gardner, another vice president. We have plenty, and you've already met Avijit Ghosh. Dr. Manning, if you would be so kind.
Good morning. It's a real pleasure and privilege I have on behalf of the entire campus of the University of Illinois Chicago to welcome our new president, Joe White, and Mary White to this campus. We marry two of the finest things in this nation, the University of Illinois and the great city of Chicago. And we have great confidence that we will give you two great pride, satisfaction, and I hope some pleasure as well. As part of our greeting, we would like to equip you for your stay at the University of Illinois at Chicago. So if you'd please come up, I'd like to go through a small presentation. First, for your edification, I want to present you with a small book, A Pictorial History of the University of Illinois at Chicago by Bob Remini, our very renowned historian. Bob specializes in the history of presidents, but you can take it easy. He usually focuses on dead presidents of the United States.
When is my quiz?
Now, also, in order to serve as president, of course, you have to dress appropriately. And so I'd like to present you with three pairs of lapel pins for UIC. You don't have to wear both of them at once. Okay. In each case, one is for Mary. If you would stand up, and we can get pinned. Welcome. Want to take the rest? Now, sometimes you can dress more casually. And so, for your relaxation, we would like to offer you a couple of sweatshirts.
Thank you.
One is medium, one is extra large. You can decide who gets which one. And finally, when you wear the sweatshirts to the basketball games, I want you to be prepared to meet the true mascot, University of Illinois, at Chicago.
Thank you very much for attending. That's it, Tom, unless you have some other ideas. Oh, questions from the audience. We got, 4 or 5 minutes for questions, if anybody has any. For anybody up here?
And there, concluding our live coverage of the announcement this morning in Chicago of a new president for the University of Illinois. Picked a former leader from the University of Michigan to be the 16th president of the University of Illinois. Again, just to review, his name is B. Joseph White. He is a business professor, also former interim president at the University of Michigan, and I think the expectation is that his appointment will be formalized by a vote of the University of Illinois Board of Trustees on November 11th. Just a moment here, we'll get back to our regular programming. We'd like you to know that coming up a little bit later today, as part of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll be talking about World War I. On the last day of the First World War, the Germans and the Allies acknowledged that the war was over, but in the hours leading up to the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, Allied generals kept up their attack and 11,000 casualties were suffered. Today on the Afternoon Magazine, Celeste Quinn will be talking about World War I with historian Joe Persico. His latest book is entitled 11th Month, 11th Day, 11th Hour. That'll be in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine today. The show itself gets underway at noon with the usual mix of news and weather and sports. Celeste Quinn is the host for the show. Coming up in the next hour of this program, we'll be talking about Pakistan, and our guest will be Stephen Cohen. He's a senior fellow in foreign policy studies at the Brookings Institution, has been following the politics of both Pakistan and India for many years. He has a new book out looking at Pakistan in its history that's titled The Idea of Pakistan, and he'll be talking with us in the next part of the show. We're going to take a break here. As usual, we'll have news at 1 minute past the hour, but before that, an update on the markets. And with the numbers, Jay Pierce.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Well, in the Chicago Board of Trade right now, December wheat is trading at 304 and a half, down 1 3/4. March at 316 and a half, down.